from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cufflinks.
Hello, welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks. I'm here with Dusty Rhodes. Dusty, good to see you today. Came up not too long ago today, so we're just getting into it here.
A little tight turnaround today, so it goes.
Yeah, sometimes you got to pack it in a little bit.
You can't always make your schedule. Sometimes your schedule makes you.
Indeed. full disclosure, you know, for those watching this, which is a smaller percentage of you than those who more wisely listen to this without our faces involved, Matt Gray not here today, so the lighting is maybe a trifle suspect. So
more dungeon-like.
Yeah, forgive our scary shadows on the show today, but, you know, it's okay.
But you can tell we're not vampires.
Yeah, that is true, which is... wait a minute. I thought there was a reflection. Do they not cast a shadow either?
I was just trying to be positive for us.
I'm bad at vampire lore, I'm going to admit. So today, we're going to start today by recognizing a new sponsor for the 2016 MLU Championship game.
A new sponsor?
Yeah, we just signed them.
Kick someone else out?
Like 2 days ago. Well, no, this is more of a... We didn't have one of these before, kind of sponsor. The first time, the championship game has a set beer sponsor, Weyerbacher Brewing Company, coming on board, as you can see if you're watching the show right here in front of us, coming on board to sponsor. So they're going to be doing a pregame sort of tailgate party over at City Tap House in University City, just up the street, a few blocks. And then they will actually be serving Weyerbacher beer in the stadium at Franklin Field, both in the VIP area, but also just for the non-VIPs, which I always feel bad saying, because everybody who shows up to our games is pretty important to me.
Well, that's a PIP. That's pretty important person.
Pretty important person. Okay, yeah. So very important people get the... Well, yeah, either way, they both get delicious Weyerbacher beer at the game. So this is the first time, I think, that Franklin Field is serving beer as a normal concession item. So...
Well, it's not going to be normal. It's going to be Weyerbacher.
Well, it's going to be a special concession. It's going to be a very important concession item.
Have we haggled over which specific beverages they're going to be supplying?
No, this is going to be an ongoing discussion, I think, over the next few weeks. But Aramark, who handles the concessions at Franklin Field, has agreed to buy whatever we request of them. So we do have some control over our destiny, over our beer destiny, our beer-stiny. but I'm sure that in addition to whatever they have at the stadium, they're probably going to have some really interesting varieties at City Tap House, since Tap House has a lot of taps. You can do kind of a tap takeover thing there. Also, rumor on the street, some beer cocktails for those adventurous among us.
I go back and forth on those.
I
like beer enough that I'm not sure I need anything added to them.
Yeah, a beer cocktail is nice when you show up at someone's house and they have a very light, non-flavored American beer that maybe is not so exciting, and then they're gonna make a little thing with it, you know, that's okay.
You can just have the whiskey then.
Also true.
Instead of making the Boilermaker, you can.
It's a valid point.
A shot in a chase.
We're recommending a lot of poor behaviors to the audience today.
Well, you know, it depends.
Speaking of poor behaviors.
I don't know where this is going.
I think you played Ultimate yesterday, is that?
I did.
Yeah. Yeah, you were limping this morning.
Yeah.
Or this afternoon.
The knees sometimes take a little more wear than other times.
Yeah.
I don't remember doing anything particularly injurious or anything along those lines. I just played some frisbee.
It's just not as much tread on those tires as there used to be.
Sometimes it's worse than others. I think the getting back into the car afterwards and all of that, driving back home, that sort of thing takes a toll as well. But you know, Roots of Rhythm still undefeated in the Mercer County A-League.
Roots of Rhythm
beat the Illuminati last night. The Illuminati was one of my previous teams in the A-League.
All right, you're a defector.
Yeah, I'm very much.
I like that.
I thought the Illuminati were going to fold, so I went to the Roots years ago, and then I haven't played in that league for 4 or 5 years, 3 years.
And the return back to the Roots.
Yeah, I like playing with that team. They got a style of play I can appreciate.
Well, let's do a little toast to the Roots with some wares from our new sponsor. This is a very fancy bottle for anyone who can't see it. We got a fancy bottle with a cork in it. That could be dangerous. Dusty is cowering.
See?
Oh, face. Good sound. So we're having, oh wow, that has a smell to it that's delicious. We're having Detango and Chain Unchained. Detango Unchained. I think a reference to the film, is that?
Yeah, that's the
Django Unchained.
It's a reference to the film, and it's also they have Tango, which is a dark Belgian ale with cherries in it, and Detango Unchained is a dark Belgian ale with cherries in it, aged on oak with Brettomyces added.
My goodness.
There's a whole bunch going on. It's kind of like splitting the difference between, you know, a Belgian double and a Belgian sort of sour cherry fruit beer sort of thing.
One of the things I noticed is that it does not have a lot of bottle copy, which we're going to have to talk to Weyerbacher about. I know how you like to read your bottle copy.
Cheers. So,
let's see what we got here. Oh, that is funky and delicious.
I've had the privilege of having this before.
This is a first for me. Yeah. This is a first for me. I've had a bunch of Weyerbacher's beers, but in the last couple of years, not as many. So I'm kind of excited to explore them as we lead up to the championship game.
Yeah, they do a handful of beers that I that I've always enjoyed. Their cases are always up in the Allentown area, which is where my parents live, which is where I go to visit, and buying cases of Weyerbacher is usually a good investment. If you buy their higher alcohol beers, they sit around for a while.
You can cellar them.
Yeah, you do some blasphemy. I'm big on cellaring. This one, I think, is cellaring pretty well. This is about a year out right now, in fact.
Yeah, all right.
So they tend to develop over time pretty well, but they also do simple stuff.
Yeah.
And they do that well.
Yeah, I've had some of that. It was very good.
They're one of the many breweries in Pennsylvania that I've been familiar with over time. That you see Weyerbacher, you're like, okay. There's a certain standard of excellence here.
Yeah, they were one of my first like craft brews when I first started living in Philly. They were one of the ones I gravitated toward originally. And since then, they make great beer. So we're excited to have them. Championship game. Come on out. Drink some Weyerbacher with us. Or at the very least, support them because they're supporting us. Which, you know, is one hand washes the other kind of thing. So thank you to Weyerbacher. Well, let's talk. We were talking about you playing Frisbee. Let's take a little step aside for the jersey of the day. What do we have here?
Jersey of the day is an Ellis Kim's seatless bicycle jersey from 2011.
Okay.
This was after Southpaw formed in 2010. A whole bunch of people didn't have anybody to play with in 2010. I escaped, ran away to Pony. They took me in, sheltered me. And in 2011, we just sort of put together a bunch of people who used to play together in Philadelphia, in New Jersey, in Yardley, some, you know, Roots of Rhythm style players as well. Just tossed them all together. Had some New York players in there as well. We may have had a couple practices that were decided that they were practices after the practice started. So everybody was already late. We just happened to be in the same place, and then practice started.
And then practice began. Yeah. It's a very, very Frisbee.
It was very loose. And this is the more normal jersey of our two
bike
jerseys.
Bike. Yeah.
It's a EKSB, pedal, pedal, pedal. And basics, get some, get like a bright kind of soccer jersey style thing. The other one is Ellis Kim on a jersey in the style of the Barack Obama Hope poster.
Yes, I've seen that one. You've worn that before.
Those are the dress whites.
The dress whites. All right, well, you should do dress whites next time around so we can get a compare and contrast.
I was fortunate enough to see Ellis Kim last week, so I thought of this jersey immediately. I just figured I should give him the shout.
What I'm most interested in...
Maybe we'll get the Ellis Kim bump.
Ooh, are we get that
ratings
on that. My question is, are you going to run out of jerseys at some point?
Sure. It's going to be a while.
All right. Well, it keep track.
It's going to be a while.
The Dusty Rhodes jersey count, I think
I've repeated
20 episodes
yet.
Now. No, I'm pretty sure you haven't.
I was a little nervous bringing in one of those horse jerseys because I think I've worn more than one horse jersey. But I don't think I've worn the same one.
Yeah, I don't think it was the same one.
They have collars on them. I like them. Mm. Make me happy.
I do love a collar on a jersey. It's a good thing. All right. Well, enough about your wardrobe. Let's talk about the Frisbee.
If we must.
Let's talk about the Frisbee. That's what I'm
we can talk about the real athletes playing Frisbee instead of mentioning my Summer League shenanigans.
Yeah, I couldn't even talk about my Summer League shenanigans. I injured myself warming up lightly last week. So my shenanigans were limited to cheering on my wife as she just took the other team apart. So this past weekend, big, exciting weekend.
It was a great weekend.
Western Conference Championships, Eastern Conference Championships. I think we're going to start on the East. A lot of times we start on the West. Let's start on the East.
Okay.
Lead into the West.
You insist.
Let's start like the settlers did in the East, and then take that slow, boring, diphtheria filled. Diphtheria? That's not right. But probably one of the things. Trip out to the west where it's beautiful. And we're very jealous of their weather right now as it's humid and hot here.
Oh, weather.
I just got a call from, email from Nathan Schorsch saying he's going to come out to the game. Nathan, of course, involved with the Portland Stags from the very, very beginning.
Remember meeting him the first year.
And he's excited to come to the game, but dreading already the Philadelphia weather, which I don't get. I think it's very comfortable. He gets cranky.
Splash some water in your face. Go into the next bar, you see. There are watering holes all over Philadelphia.
It is true. We're full of oases. So let's start on the East Coast.
Sure.
Philadelphia, Boston, rematch of last year. In Philly this time instead of in Boston. Did that make a difference? Was that the difference maker?
Was that the difference maker? It was a 4-point game, so it was 20-16 in the end.
In the end,
Philadelphia won. And Boston seemed to just sort of, like, they got down a little bit early. Boston came back in the second quarter, even got a lead in the third quarter. But as the fourth quarter went on, Boston sort of, either the wheels came off or they fell apart a little bit, or one of those stock phrases that we want to use. It
loosened up.
Loosening up could have implied that they were sort of, you know, feeling
free. That's not true, yeah.
As the play went on. But in the end, they just didn't have what they needed to in the fourth quarter. For Boston, their defensive line had zero possessions in the fourth quarter and zero possessions in the first quarter. So that's a sign of just not having an opportunity to score, an opportunity to break back. And Boston's defense let up a run right at the end of the game, which, sure, it could have been fueled on by the crowd. And the crowd was louder in the second half than they were in the first half.
Much louder.
This is in part
from my impression in the stands, much louder.
Some calls that could have gone one way or the other, some physical play here and there, and that really sort of set the crowd on edge a bit. It was the stands were full. They weren't packed to the gills, but they were full.
They were
full. It wasn't standing room only.
No,
but they were full.
But it was full. Yeah. You were sitting next to someone, no matter
even
where
if you didn't
at.
Want to. Well,
yeah.
If you were,
there was a contingent of Boston fans that were down in kind of the front left there.
A lot of old spinners, ex-spinners, I should say. They're not actually old. People who used to play on the spinners were there. Saw some Art Schull, saw some Davini, saw some Perifico, saw a bunch of folks out there.
A lot of ex-spinners out there wearing their jerseys, coming out proud. One of the things I noticed that I loved, and I'm bringing it up because you brought up that call, is, and not everybody's going to love this, I'm willing to admit that, but as a... as someone who played a lot of sports and, was involved and got a chance to play in front of some crowds when I was younger, the fans at this one point, there's a collision at midfield. I think it's Radoms and
Braz.
And Braz, yep. So
Radoms tips the disc.
He tips the disc. He's unable to catch it. And then
goes up for the second one.
Braz collides with him.
This is a difficult call for refs. And
very difficult.
I've mentioned this before. You just don't know exactly what to do, because if he had just caught it the first time, there probably would have been no collision. But he needs to have a chance to catch it the second time. But they're both just sort of looking up at the disc.
Yeah,
Braz immediately was like, I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah, clearly nobody was at fault. The question is whether Radoms has a right to that second opportunity, whether Braz interfered with that.
Well, he certainly has a
right
to exist on the field without being clobbered.
Yeah, and he did get clobbered. I mean, that was a hit.
But it's the same thing.
But again, so it's a no call.
Yeah.
By the officials, turnover, Boston disc. The crowd turns full Philly.
Yes.
And
yes.
Just starts booing and heckling and shouting. And for a moment, I closed my eyes and I had this deep well up of satisfaction. Like, this crowd cares in a way that, you know, I remember going to games in the first year and like good plays would happen and they'd get applause and cheers from both the team that was the supporting team and the away team, and you know, just felt kind of congenial in a way. Yes, the fans cared and they got more behind their team, but all felt like still had a congenial level, which is nice. But for a sports fan, you want to see some passion. And I felt like that clicked on a switch of passion in that crowd that on Sunday that really entertained me. And I'll tell you this too, and this isn't the case with the refs, but as a player, have you ever been booed before?
Not by a sufficient number of people, but yes. I'd say about 20 or 30 people have booed me.
It's amazing. I getting booed was much better than getting cheered for me. Because that, I walked on a field, getting cheered for is great, right? But yeah. Your home fans are going to cheer for you anyway. And I remember for sectional games and stuff in soccer, you used to get 500, 600, 700 people out sometimes for the bigger games, right? And when I remember going to Pittsford Mendon, I think it was, and anybody from Rochester area is going to recognize these names maybe. But I remember going there for a game to go to States or something like that. And the fans actually, the Pittsford Mendon fans knew me well enough to boo me when I walked out. And that was amazing.
Well, it's better being booed by your opponents than by your own fans.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to be booed by your own fans. That's a terrible feeling.
That's a bad sign.
That's a bad feeling. Getting booed by opponents, though, is a wonderful one. And if you haven't had that happen, I suggest you go and try it.
Well, this is part of the thing that I keep bringing this back to when we talk about what Ultimate is and what the changes are that are happening in the sport right now. Just the very notion that you're playing in front of fans and that they're cheering or booing or just applauding or, you know, making that gasping sound when the disc goes
up. I love that sound.
Oh.
Yeah. I make that sound involuntarily all the time.
Any of those, it's just bringing this investment from people who are outside of the playing environment itself to the game. And what does that bring to bear on the game? Like, how does that change the experience of it? Bras was getting heckled at a couple different points.
Yeah.
There were some rude Philadelphia chants to Boston after the game was over.
Oh, I didn't hear those.
Well, they weren't off color. They were just rude. You know.
It's Philly.
they weren't totally creative, but they were.
No, that sounds about
right.
They
were a little cutting.
Yeah.
I
missed that.
Bras definitely got a "you can't do that" chant during the said conflagration.
Hmm.
But
see, I know people will have different feelings about this. Some people will want to keep this kind of like very nice, friendly vibe, and I completely understand that. Just as a sports fan, and as a as a fan of this game in particular, I like the passion. I like the energy. As long as it doesn't cross that border into hooliganism and garbage that you see sometimes in other sports. Like, I don't like the way that Philadelphia Eagles fans behave at games, by and large. And I'm sorry, Philadelphia Eagles fans. It's just a fact. Not all of you. In fact, probably just a minority of you. But it's a little on the aggressive side.
It's one of those questions where you have that small core of fans that are just totally outrageous.
Yeah.
And they kind of give a pass for everybody else. So, like, everybody else can just be on the line.
You
can
fill in behind them.
It's totally okay.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, you're just kind of... You're there, like, you're yelling inappropriate things, but you're not punching people in the face because they have the wrong shirt on.
Yeah, that's what I'm... That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Yeah, let's not do that.
You're not, like, peeing in the stands. Yeah. Like, you can... You're an adult enough to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah, which we do have.
You've been potty trained.
We have those at every stadium. They are available
for everyone.
At least this year.
I think the first season there are a couple incidents where we didn't have...
There's a learning curve for these sorts of things. But anyway, yeah, I thought the fans got really behind it. And again, whether you like the booing or not to the officials.
Well, but then again,
it's the way it goes.
The Boston fans tend to have something to say to the officials as well
during
those calls. And their home announcer really stirs up the stuff.
He does.
During those games.
He does.
And we can hear him from upstairs, and we're just like, oh, man. Is he just going to incite these folks into a riot or something along those lines? We just don't know what's going on. So there's a little give and take.
There is also, Ultimate does have a history of heckling as being a thing, and some of the fans really do a nice job with that, too. So I do like all of that, too. It still has a... Even though it's getting that game felt a little more like some of the other sports I'd been to with the fan interaction, there was still an ultimate edge to a lot of it, which was funny.
I'm going up to the U.S. Open this weekend, which is up in Rhode Island, USAU, big first tournament of the season. Be watching Scandal.
That's going
to
be real heckling.
So I'm concerned. I think I'm going to get my brother to come to one of these days with me.
Mm.
And with the number of games that are going on at once, you don't get all of the fans in one spot. So if I'm like the one fan, or we're the two fans watching a game, and we can get everybody to pay attention to us, that's like a feather in our cap. And I don't know if we can make that positive.
Can I give you guys a camera and a live stream unit? Can you just get some commentary?
Oh, absolutely. I'll commentate the whole thing by myself.
Oh, I love it. Maybe we'll just have you do a radio show. We'll get you just a live stream it as a radio show. Oh, I would love that. Let's get back to this game before we get too far off.
The game was one of the things that I noticed in this game is something that I've been paying attention to a lot recently, and this is shooting percentage. And what I define as shots in ultimate are throws into the end zone.
Okay.
And it doesn't count like rollers into the end zone. It does count like hucks that just sail out the back.
So throws that have crossed the end zone.
Essentially throws that theoretically at some point during their flight path could have been caught for a goal.
Okay.
Assuming that you can jump an infinite amount. You know, like you threw the disc into the end zone. So the other team is at least going to have to start from their goal line.
Okay.
And we can start from
there's a definition for us. All right.
Generally. Yeah. Rollers not the same.
Yeah.
It has to be there in flight. So if we look at this game, Philadelphia and Boston, Philadelphia completed 92.95% of their passes on the whole. Boston completed 90.37% of their passes on the whole. Generally pretty good.
So, yep.
So Philadelphia on throws on the field, not going into the end zone,
okay,
was 94.01%. Pretty high. Mm-hmm. Boston throws not going into the end zone was 92.82%. Also pretty high. Both of those are about 2 points
above. Similar distribution, yeah. Away from the mean.
If we look at the shots that they took into the end zone, Philadelphia was 20 for 24 on shots into the end zone. So they were 83.33% completion. And that would have been good for very high in the regular season rankings. And Boston was 16 for 23, which is 69.57% completion on their shoots, on their shots. So it's like a very low shooting percentage.
Yeah, yeah.
So the difference in how those two games went has a lot to do with what happens when you're throwing the disc into the end zone. In this specific instance, for Boston, they were throwing it into the end zone around players like Greg Martin and Matt Esser.
Yeah.
We saw them come up with a number of plays up in the air, taking goal-scoring opportunities away from Boston, then just getting back down the other end of the field. It's been an interesting thing to pay attention to these two because Philadelphia did very well over the course of the season against top-level competition in shooting percentage. They led the league. Their defensive side led the league in shooting percentage against playoff teams.
Hmm.
And Boston did all right, but Portland was the other team that just did extraordinarily well in shooting percentage, whereas Seattle was a little bit lower.
Interesting. So
what is it that makes these things different?
Oh, man. This is going to take some study, right? Because one of the things is what distance are people taking those attempts from? Is this a problem with high-risk attacks?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a problem with actually lower-risk attacks but a more condensed end zone as all the players are jammed into kind of that 40-yard area?
Based on just anecdotal evidence, watching these games,
yeah.
All of the teams in the MLU have strong end zone offenses.
It seems that way.
So if you put them within 5 yards of the goal, they're going to score because it's a very large end zone, and the players are very difficult to cover.
They are pretty difficult. Yeah.
And even if you make them take a couple passes, most teams are not turning the disc over right on their end zone. And if they do, it's a rare occurrence. So I think it has more to do with what are you doing in your mid-range sort of shots, and what are you doing in your full field hucks. Now this does also take into account, you know, those half field heaves. Midfield heaves as time expires.
That's true. You have the quarter break shots.
But those are kind of distributed evenly throughout the course of the season. I'm always more interested in the aggregate stats than I am in the individual game stats. I find them more interesting, and they sort of normalize a little bit.
You need a bigger sample size. Yeah, that's without a doubt. That makes sense.
So, and then Philadelphia just, they were 6 for 6 on offensive possessions in the first and fourth quarters. So the flip side of that, the reason Boston didn't get the disc on their defensive side in the first and fourth quarters is because Philadelphia didn't turn the disc over on offense.
Makes sense.
First and fourth quarters. But it bears repeating because that's one of the best ways that you can keep your opponent from just having an opportunity at all.
Yeah, if you can convert on offense 100% of the time, you're probably going to win.
That mythical ultimate team that everybody talks about that just doesn't ever happen.
Yeah.
Or maybe it happens once or twice that I can think of.
Yeah, I'm sure it's occurred, but it's not common.
If you're doing that, you just don't have...
Why are we even playing? We'll just flip a coin. We'll be done.
What is the advantage that we have in this game?
So final score?
20-16. Philadelphia wins. Goes on to the championship game for the first time. They were fourth in the first year, third in the next year, second last year, first this year.
I didn't realize that.
They've increased their wins every year so far.
That is interesting. So 4-3-2-1. They've built all the way to this game.
Yep.
That's a very cool statistic. And then on the other side of the field, we have the very cool statistic of Portland, the only team that hasn't yet been in the championship out of the West Coast. So our fourth team to get there.
They'll be the first West Coast team to have already played an East Coast team before coming out for the championship.
Wheels within wheels. Wheels within wheels.
Thinking about this championship game a lot, I'm excited to see what happens here.
Very excited. Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's talk about the Seattle-Portland matchup before we go too much further. So Seattle goes to Portland to play. Told the crowd was good. Told, you know, good energy at this game. Watching the game, so I was watching it on an iPad at a hotel. I had some family business last weekend. By the way, just want to say, Grandma, I love you. I miss you. You know, she was a well-loved woman, June Bond, and she will be missed. But she lived a great life, great life. And produced just an insane amount of people. There's so many of us.
That is one of the ways that we tend to judge success as a human.
Oh, my Lord. She won in that battle. Nine kids, and they all had a ton of kids. There's like, they have that like
can't imagine
lineage on the back of the program at the funeral, and it took up the whole thing. Like, it was barely room, small font. But we all were there. So that was a big event, and we're having a barbecue, and I have the game up, and a bunch of my family members are gathered around watching it. I mean, yeah, the game got away a little bit early, which you'll talk about, I'm sure. But it was still a fun game to watch. There were still some great plays, some good catches. Some, you know, Seattle, even when they're not winning, is still a really fun team to watch play, I think. I think they have a really cool, like, team energy. Mm-hmm. And I know, because I follow Ben Beener on Twitter, I know that they have a bunch of ways to win in a game. He puts up, I don't know if you've seen this, he puts up on a whiteboard in the locker room Beener's bounties each game. So there's prizes for getting, like,
he's going to get in trouble with the league for his bounties.
I've got to read these, but they're funny. They're not like, you know, Cody Bjorklund's knee. But they're like, you know, they're like, get this many blocks in the first half, things like that. And some of them are funny. I wish I should have looked up some examples before I did this. But you can tell that the team...
shirt in anger.
That's a good one. But you can tell the team is like sort of playing on that stuff too and playing with that energy all the time. They're always playing. Like, they're never heads down, like, done. They're always playing. So they're a fun team to watch. So the game was fun, even though, as you're about to tell us, it was pretty much over in the first quarter.
I would say that, yes, it was over in the first quarter. Seattle came out with this game plan of using a zone, which is a highly variable zone near the disc from what I could see. Probably had one person over the top and then had six underneath. And it seemed to vary from, like, a 2-2-2. To like a 2-4, and then to like a 2-3. Like, they were very aware and shifting through. It seemed like they were cutting down the Portland throwing lanes, forcing them to actually throw over the top, which Portland didn't seem in a rush to do in this specific game. They have in other games against other opponents, they've just been like, oh, right, you've got some people here, we're gonna throw it to the other side of the field, drop the hammer. So it started off in the first possession on the first point. Portland's offensive line had a 40-throw offensive possession, eventually went down for a goal, but that's the longest offensive possession in the MLU in 2016.
That's a lot of throws.
Right, and so...
A considerable number of throws. It's too many throws.
And eventually, Ted Jansen had 24 for 24 in the first quarter. So you're just increasing the number of throws, and what that does as a defense is it just increases the chance that your opponent will just have a drop or a hiccup or just throw it to a guy when he's stepping the other direction or something. So you're just trying to increase the number of times that something untoward will happen.
I mean, every throw is an opportunity for a turnover, right?
Yeah.
It's the only opportunity, really, for the most part, is if they throw or run out of time, I guess. But so the more you can make them throw, the theory would be, the more you can make them throw, the more chances you have for that. And you reduce the overall number of possessions in the game as well.
Yeah, because you just extend each one of them. And this was also Portland's time with the most throws in a game this season, 269 throws, which beat their previous best by about 30 or so. Hmm. So that very first possession could have been the difference, 40 throws.
Yeah.
The issue, however, was that in the first quarter, Portland just dominated Seattle for the most part in terms of scoring opportunities and scoring chances. Seattle scored one goal in the first quarter, and that was on a tip
from
Woodside. Ended up macking the disc, and then player runs in for the second catch. His name is escaping me at the moment.
Sliva. Yeah. It was Sliva. Yes, it was.
I can just picture him doing it. I can't zoom in and picture his number in the video in my head. But Seattle's defense in the first three quarters had one shot and one goal on two possessions. That's through three quarters. Mm. Portland's defense through the first three quarters had eight shots, eight goals on 15 possessions. So that's kind of the tale of how it worked for the defensive side. But back to the first quarter for a moment, Seattle had that one goal, and then they moved Henry Fan over to the offensive line, and he had just two total execution errors, unforced errors in the first quarter.
Unlike him.
The first one was at 2-1, and then Portland went and broke just after that. And the next one was at 3-1, and at 3-1, an interesting thing happened where Portland got the D at after this unforced error, essentially it kind of went into a crowd. Portland took a timeout, subbed in their O-line. After they subbed in their O-line, Portland's O-line on defense turned the disc over three more times. So Seattle had the disc three more times with three more opportunities to score and never managed to.
Just couldn't put it in.
But they kept using Portland's offense out there. So if they had scored that break, Portland would have had to theoretically figure out who their second offensive unit is, which I don't think they ever had to do in this game whatsoever. But they could have had to do that in the very first quarter against Seattle, and it would have been 3-2. Instead, it's 4-1. Portland's up at that point. Then Seattle receives the disc with 22 seconds left. We talk about this on almost every single broadcast. 22 seconds left. You want to make sure that you get a shot at goal. You want to make sure your opponent doesn't get a shot at goal. And above all, you want to make sure that they don't get a shot on goal without you having a shot on goal.
It's the last shot scenario. It's very similar to basketball.
So you just want to control that last possession. Seattle fires a hammer through the center of the field, turns it over. Portland picks it up, tosses it to McGinn. McGinn tosses a hammer for a goal. 5-1, first quarter's over. You're down four breaks against the Stags, who want nothing better than just play from ahead, stay in their style, not have to make a comeback.
Yep.
And your style going into this game is to increase possession length, slow the game down a little bit. That's not a way
to
make a comeback.
Which you can't do now.
Right.
Now you have to switch that up. You have to start trying to make things happen quickly.
Which is totally against your game plan.
Pressure's on.
So that first quarter really changed the entire tenor of the game, and it seemed that Seattle got into some man defenses, tried to do some things here. Dylan Harrington just seems to be able to create blocks on the field all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they got a couple opportunities from him alone. But on the whole, Seattle was still running that same zone defense late in the fourth quarter, and that just kind of speaks to they had a game plan, and it didn't work. They didn't have a second game plan that was in place to deal with who the Stags were in this game.
So, Stags finally do it then.
Yeah. They came out with what's the score here I've got? 18-9.
Because they've lost two tough ones over the last 2 years. They lost to the Nighthawks in 2014.
14-13 or something along there.
And then they had another similar type of loss to Seattle.
17-16, I think. Yeah.
So finally, Stags get through. They're coming to Philadelphia. I'll tell you this: we're getting. I think we're getting Cody Bjorklund, Timmy Purston, a couple other people, maybe Eli Friedman, a few other people in early on Friday.
Ah.
So we're gonna get them in the studio here. Gonna do some interviewee stuff. See what
that
we get out of them. Should be interesting. Should be fun. We may have some spinners in too because we're trying to do kind of a media day thing here. I want to do like a classic like boxing.
the weigh in, the tail. The
weigh
in.
Oh, that's tail. Let's weigh him in. Oh, that's fantastic.
So would you have Bjorklund or Esser in the weigh in?
No, we got to go opposites. We'd go like Hironet.
Colton.
Oh, Colton's catch this weekend, by the way.
Well, both he and McCutchen had excellent catches. McCutchen's was a little bit easier, Tyler Chan chasing him down. But Colton came down with one over Tanner Johnson, where it looked like Tanner's giant hand just didn't close quickly enough.
Yeah, just not as much snap as he needed right there. Yeah. So Portland coming to Philadelphia. They're going to get on a plane. They're going to fly to Philadelphia. They're going to get some sleep.
Some.
Hopefully. And then they're going to come out and play at Franklin Field. So I wanted to talk a little bit as we get to the end of this here. We're going to have time over the next couple of weeks to talk about this matchup in a lot more detail. I want to talk a little bit about the day.
The thing itself.
The thing itself. So
the experience.
It's going to be cool.
I want to win that disc golf thing.
You're not allowed to win. So the whole thing will start with, we of course have the tailgate party at City Tap House in Philly.
Tailgate kind of foods?
They do tailgate kind of foods. They got some sort of lawn game thing set up.
This is part of the pub run, that City Tap House.
Yeah. For the St. Patrick's Day pub run. Well, you do now. I don't do it anymore. So specials on beer and drinks. Weyerbacher will be there. That'll be really cool. Then we have a kids clinic, which Anthony Nunez, the coach of the New York Rumble, is coming down to run. And I think a bunch of the New York players are coming down to help him out. So that'll be kids being able to go on the field. It's for 8 to 18. We're doing big range. They'll be able to go on the field and play ultimate with, you know, the professionals. And they'll meet the spinners and the stags, and they'll get to play around with the guys from the Rumble. Should be really cool for that experience, I think.
All I can think is meet the Mets.
Meet the Mets.
Come on out.
Come on out and meet the Mets. We tried to get the Mets, but they weren't available.
They're busy during the summer. They're the boys of summer.
Yeah, boys of summer. So that'll be fun too. And so we'll have all the kids out there. Then we have game time. You know, you got to be on your game. You and Jeff Poster calling the game. MLU Live.
And more.
Five cameras on the field.
No, speaking of which, this past weekend we had
the
end zone.
We experimented with the five cameras, yeah.
In Philadelphia, we got some excellent shots of that. Not just of some goals being scored here and there, but we got to set up behind the offense as they're starting to go down the field during their possession. I like the way it showed how much space some of the teams and some of the offenses create.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that end zone cam a lot. And as we went through the game, we figured out how to use it a little bit better.
Yeah.
We weren't used to it before.
Yeah, it's a new thing, and I'm glad we introduced it last game, because this game we're going to have to really bring it into play, and we're going to have cameras on both end zones this time. Total of five cameras on the field and a sixth, I think, booth camera. It looks like so. You got to wear your nice clothes.
Always wearing my nice clothes at these games. I dress like an adult.
You do dress like an adult. It's true. You do. We'll talk to Poster.
I dress like more of an adult there than I do for this.
Oh, and that's true. Well, you
not
should.
Even on camera.
You clearly should. I mean, that's obvious.
I don't drink in the booth. That's inappropriate.
Also, that's not that.
It's not the.
It's a serious time.
It's not the major league.
It's the major league ultimate. Not the Cleveland Indians.
That's what I'm saying. little Bob Uecker.
Yeah. We got a bunch of. We got some bands. We have some, you know, entertainment. The quarter breaks. All kind of surprises we'll keep for now.
So how early does this stuff start that day?
So I believe we're starting the tailgate party at 3. Game is at 6:30. Is the first pull. Kids clinic will be at 4. If you go to mluchampionship.com, all this stuff is laid out. We're adding details all the time. The other cool thing is, of course, the thing you were talking about. We'll do the Innova $10,000 throw at halftime. So Innova is sponsoring this. It's a 50-yard disc golf throw. So disc golfers out there,
you can make 50
come
yards.
Come on out.
That's a makeable shot.
We're going to hand you, I think they're sending us rocks. If you play disc golf, they're going to send us rocks, which is their mid-range driver.
Can you do something other than even get to play.
Even do this. So we hand everybody a rock. They get, what we're going to do basically is you sign up. We'll do a drawing. We're going to pick 10 people. They get to come down to the field. They get to have a go. If somebody makes it, they win $10,000.
I don't know if I can throw a rock.
If nobody makes it.
I do the S-curve. The rock is more of a, anyway.
You can't compete in this.
Right, but I want to anyway.
You're not allowed. But even if you don't win, you get to take home the disc with you as a little souvenir, which is nice. And then after the game, back to City Tap House, big post-game bash. They'll have the fires lit out on the patio. Again, the beer specials with Weyerbacher, big party. Everybody has a good time. And we all go our separate ways. If you're traveling from out of town, we're going to have some hotel deals nearby. So we have some stuff we're announcing about that. All kinds of fun stuff.
I'm excited for this weekend again. Every year that I've been with the MLU so far, championship weekend has been an event.
It's a fun thing. And at the, we're going to talk about this more next week, so I can just drop like a hint on it. But this year we've managed a broader broadcast deal. In tape delay.
That does involve me.
A few days after the game, a week after the game, depending on the market. This game will be showing in a lot of our markets. And so we'll go into some details next time with some times and look for the press release on that. But it's pretty exciting. I think we're reaching something in the neighborhood of 30 million households this year with the championship game. So you better be on your game.
Well, it's odd because when I go to Summer League on Tuesdays, some of the players will be like, so which game are you commentating tonight? I don't know what you're talking about. Then I realized that TCN Philly shows these on like Tuesday nights on broadcast.
And yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, oh, yeah, that game was on th- that already
happened. It's the past week's game.
So I have to like go backwards in time, which is not my best attribute.
Yeah, I think it's a little strange for people that follow the league, but for people that don't follow closely, it's an introduction to the sport, and it's been amazing in Philly. The number of people I talk to who watch these games, yeah, I mean, it's everywhere I go.
We still have old teammates coming out of the woodwork to be like, hey, yeah. I thought I heard your voice on the TV the other day.
Heard that noise you were making.
I'm sorry about that. I'll try to say something a little more enlightening next time.
Yeah, you got to be...
don't want to be in heavening.
Got to be on your game. Oh, man, that's a good ending note. We don't have any more time. We're out of time. We're just completely out of time.
That'll happen.
Yeah. But when we come back next time, next week, we're going to talk actually more about this championship game matchup. We'll talk about some new things that are happening around that. And, you know, maybe even some 2017 stuff. I don't know.
I got some homework to get done before we get to this championship game.
Yeah, there's plenty of homework. Yeah. Fortunately, you have a couple weeks. So,
yeah, I'm excited about that, too.
We'll keep settle that going.
Down and get aggressive with it.
Dig in.
Yeah.
Dig in. Well, thanks, Dusty. It's been a pleasure, as always. You can, of course, get me at Nick Darling, N-I-C Darling, on Twitter, at DustTweeter, DustTweeter, or both of us at Cleats Cufflinks. Go to mouchampionship.com to check out all the championship happenings and news. And if you can't make it to Philadelphia for the game, I feel really sad for you because it's going to be great. But if you can't, mouchlive.com. We'll be carrying the full live broadcast, or you may be able to watch it on TV a little after the game in your local market. We'll have more on that next week on Cleats and Cufflinks.
Cheering for the overtime in the championship game.
First overtime championship game. #overtime.